This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Reality, so quaint, but in so many ways, it just isn't pulling its weight these days.
Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that.
Obviously, when reality doesn't comport with ideology or religion or just unrequited desire, it's easily dislodged by lies, fantasy, or unfounded belief. On the experiential front, when mere two-dimensional media leave us cold, the holy crap immersive world of virtual reality spirits us into its 360-degree thrall.
Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
And then there's just plain navigating the physical world with all its annoying limits of time, space, and human anatomy that make it so difficult to find your car in a parking lot or perform brain surgery. How cool would it be if we could just don a pair of goggles and digitally augment ordinary analog reality with information, 3D images, and even the sense of touch? Yeah, well, we can. That thing called augmented reality is here, and more of it, much more, is on its way.
A profound redefinition of normal keeps happening. And it's about to happen again, because within 5 years from now, the revolution will be over.
That was NYU computer science professor Ken Perlin speaking Tuesday in New York at AR in Action, a conference of augmented reality pioneers and their financiers.
We will all be wearing lightweight eyewear that'll show virtual objects in the world around us in high resolution, high frame rate, extremely wide field of view. Smart glasses will become socially invisible, just like the glasses that many of you are wearing today.
How great is that? Strap on some goggles and manipulate floating holograms with your fingertips. Repair an espresso maker from the other side of the world. Or see inaccessible structures turned inside out, such as a diseased brain.
The patient is going to be in the OR, lying on the bed. We have our spatial understanding camera. So during the process of the surgery, you can actually see what's going on inside the patient's head.
This is superimposing MRI images onto an actual brain during surgery?
Yes.
Medicine accounts for many of AR's early successes. This is Keith Boesky of ODG, manufacturer of remarkably compact smart glasses, which are great for watching movies in an airplane or helping a paramedic treat an accident victim.
The golden hour is right there when the person just had the accident, but ambulances can take a long time to get them to the hospital. So the EMT can have the doctor see what they're seeing, and the doctor can walk them through exactly what to do while they're there.
And imagine augmenting sight and sound with touch through the science of haptics. Robin Alter of Ultra Haptics demonstrated how ultrasound can trigger discrete sensations through the air.
We are getting better and better. Over the next year, we'll have more refined textures. So right now, we're at hard and soft, and over time, we'll get to cotton and rock, and then we'll get to silk and sandpaper.
All very promising, he said, for e-retailing, touch the goods, and duh, porn. Also, turns out you can shoot lightning bolts through your fingers.
Open your hands and face them down. See if you feel it.
I do, yes. There's electricity surging through my hands.
Yeah. These are sound waves, not electricity at all.
This isn't some World's Fair expo of the distant future. Microsoft, Google, Apple, and billions of dollars worth of venture capital are already in the market with various headsets, software platforms, and developer tools, uncannily mimicking the wizardry long imagined in literature and film.
To Oz?
To Oz.
We come to observe the wonderful Wizard of Oz.
In 1901, L. Frank Baum of Wizard of Oz fame wrote in his novel The Master Key about magical spectacles that project information about the people the wearer encounters. In the 1956 film Forbidden Planet, ingenue Anne Francis is holographically projected into the presence of the brilliant Dr. Morbius.
A statue? That's Altera.
Simply a three-dimensional image, Commander.
But it's alive.
A year ago, fantasy and AR themselves merged in the form of Pokemon Go. Recall the swarms of Pokemon go-getters, led by cell phone images, invading public spaces to capture Lapras or Snorlax. Pokemon Go spawned mobs with a silly game, What the technology promises is no mere plaything. To NYU's Ken Perlin, we are on the brink of altering human capabilities and behavior on a mass scale.
The phones are a transitional technology. They are going to fade away, and they are going to be replaced eventually by unobtrusive eyewear. Everybody will wear it, and no one will notice they're wearing it anymore. You don't go up to someone and say, oh, I see you're wearing shoes today.
Soon, says technologist and conference founder John Werner, we won't be satisfied interacting with the world without the third dimension.
We're 3D beings, okay? We went from the mainframe to the desktop to the laptop to now mobile, held hostage by rectangles. You haven't lived until you started playing with 3D objects and realizing, you know, I don't know what it would be like to see black and white your whole life and then suddenly see color.
An unbelievable experience I can now personally confirm. To Werner, though, what's unfathomable is limiting our computing to two dimensions, like that bizarre planet in an episode of Star Trek Next Generation.
The probe's point of view reveals that the objects exist entirely in two dimensions, on a single plane.
They have length and width, but not height. Virtually flat.
Werner put his livelihood where his vision was, bolting MIT's Media Lab to join the AR startup Meta. And you'd be forgiven for gulping a bit as his gamble, because we've been here before, right?
The gadget will bring convenience to consumers some may have never imagined.
With simple vocal commands, the specs are being touted as allowing wearers to take photos, send text messages, and record video, all hands-free.
It's just really sheer magic.
Only 4 years ago, Google Glass was the next big thing, until it wasn't.
Google Glass, I would not say, was some big success, you know, far from it.
Battery life is still meaning. I can't keep it on very often, otherwise it'll die.
The era of Google Glass has ended, at least for now.
Yeah, and for good measure, the people who did plunk down $1,500 for Google Glass were derided as pretentious glass holes. But several billion dollars say the stars are now properly aligned. Advances in miniaturization and processing power, the advent of 5G mobile wireless, and the ubiquity of indispensable smartphone apps that are all but begging to be augmented into something even more magical. John Werner's Meta colleague, Ryan Pamplin.
So if I want an Uber when I leave here, I want to be able to reach down into my holographic belt, grab my Uber orb, open my hand, have it show me a 3D terrain map of the surrounding area, drop a pin where I want to go or say where I want to go, and then I want the car to come. And when it comes, I want to see a line drawn on the ground to the car. The driver will look over at me and see an arrow over my head and know I'm his passenger. There's a lot of really exciting use cases. Shopping, learning, design, manufacturing, collaboration, communication. I really think there's no industry that will go unaffected by this technology.
This presumes, of course, that the hardware is affordable and nobody wearing it gets bullied for looking like a dork. The latest generation Meta Viewer is still kind of bulky, like a bike helmet with a visor. Microsoft's HoloLens isn't much smaller. The industry understands it can't grow exponentially until the tech shrinks dramatically.
I would say 2018, you're going to see something that's smaller, lighter, portable. And eventually, if you want to fast forward to, let's say, 2030-ish, it's a computer brain interface that's reading and writing to your senses.
The year 2030, exactly as distant as 2004. The year of Abu Ghraib and Shrek 2. So, wait, what did he say?
It's a computer brain interface that's reading and writing to your senses.
Yeah, that. This technology promises to give speech to stroke victims or enable you to send a stuck-in-traffic message with your mind. Wow. It can map and store brain activity and biometrics for a deeper understanding of human behavior. Double wow. And it can maybe even influence that behavior. Yikes. This is worth thinking about. Hard. Professor Ken Perlin is bullish about AR's utopian future. He's the future is only 5 years away guy, but he's also really scared about dystopia.
There was a day in March when two things happened on the same day. our Republican-controlled Congress decided to be absolutist about the rights of telecoms to be able to scrape your data and sell it to advertisers. And the reason that this was so worrisome is that, well, now you no longer have the rights to your own information. And the same day, Elon Musk announced the formation of his new company, Neuralink, which promises direct brain connections to the information world around you.
Musk has taken an active role in developing what he calls neural lace technology, which involves installing tiny electrodes in the brain to transmit thoughts.
So as I see it, under the now new laws, anyone who is responsible for the pipe between your brain and the world around you is allowed to sell your thoughts and capitalize on them and fundamentally read them with impunity. And you don't really own your thoughts anymore legally.
Remember, AR is two-way technology. Users will constantly feed the signals of what they see and thereby map the physical landscape of the populated world, including faces, in real time, retrievable by anybody for who knows what. In that world, you can augment, but you cannot hide. Georgia Tech professor Janet Murray, author of Hamlet on the Holodeck, thinks the ethical implications of AR are one of several reasons the technology will develop much more slowly than its evangelists predict.
I can see that people do speak rather casually about a world in which a person is under surveillance 24 hours a day. And I find that disturbing. And I also find it naive for technologists to believe that that is going to be something that people will welcome.
I guess I should in some way be telling you that that's not going to happen, but a very scary future is ahead of us.
Robin Alter of Ultra Haptics, the company whose technology generates the artificial sense of touch.
Because it's not just about our personal data, it's about our biometrics, heart rate, sweat, eye movement, pupil movement, what parts of the brain are lighting up at different points, and you can start to see what they're thinking. Then guide them to buy your product. Do you want them to fall in love? As things move forward over the next 5 to 10 years, it's going to be a scary reality of what is possible.
Here's who you cannot count on to exhibit self-control. Advertisers. The money that will underwrite AR content is the same that is barraging you now with pop-ups, autoplays, screen takeovers, and tracking you every step of the way. Now, imagine that 1 inch from your eyeballs, as filmmaker Keiichi Matsuda did in his video called Hyperreality, depicting a grotesque carnival midway of audiovisual distraction. Put that in your pipe and augment it. It is exactly such side effects that Georgia Tech's Janet Murray thinks will slow down the future.
It is delusional to think that we're going to have a functional metaverse in 5 years, as people here seem to believe. That does not happen overnight. And it does not happen from a magic leap of secret technology that all of a sudden arrives and life has changed for everybody.
On the other hand, before you moderate your expectations too much, consider all those big Silicon Valley bets on AR. And remember the words of Philip K. Dick, whose Minority Report predicted this technology in all its chilling glory. Skepticism is all well and good, but as Dick once observed, reality is that which, when you stop believing in it, doesn't go away. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Mira Sharma, Alana Casanova-Burgess, Jesse Brenneman, Michael Loewinger, and Leia Fetter. We had more help from Jane Vaughn, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Terrence Bernardo.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. Bassist, composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
One last thing, listeners. We're doing a show about how the effects of climate change are seeping into our culture, and we'd like your help. As human impact on the planet becomes more visible in rising seas, droughts, powerful storms, disappearing species, we're going to need new words to make sense of it all. Here's an example. Solastalgia. It means sadness or yearning for a landscape that climate change has rendered unrecognizable. So, can you come up with a new word that captures something about our changing planet? Perhaps a word for a beach eroded by rising seas, or maybe a word for an unseasonably warm day in winter. Record a voice memo and email it to onthemedia@wnyc.org. And please include your name and where you're calling from. You might just be featured in an upcoming show. Thanks.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.